We will now have a 10-minute question period with Michel Blanc and John Grohol, if you would like to stand here on the podium. Just 10 minutes before the coffee. And then during the coffee break, I invite you to go browse in the bookstore, because we have the books of Dr. Barnett, Rothbaum, Spiegel, Grohol, Barak, and myself. I would like those people to please present yourself to the bookstore as soon as possible, because people are likely to want to buy your book. So we will now have a question period. We have two young ladies on each side who are ready to pass on the mic to you. And I will be giving my mic to our two guests.
I mean, that. How much of a shift has it been to seeing people use mental health information and services online? Absolutely. I think there's been a significant number more people looking for mental health services online. Last time we looked at that data, we found that of those people looking for a health condition or health concern on the internet, about 20% of them were a mental health concern. So that survey number that I put up that showed consumers looking for a specific condition, when they're looking for a specific condition, 20% of those conditions are mental health conditions, which is about average for the industry if you look at, you know, how many people are likely to have a mental disorder or whatnot in the population. So in terms of that number going up or down, it's really hard to say. I mean, I think that our numbers are going up, and we're not doing any kind of online advertising or anything to explain that. They're just going up organically. People are looking for more information on our website, and it's the number is greater than just number of people going up on the internet. So.
Hi. Two really fascinating talks. Thank you. My question is about disinhibition and anonymity in Web 2.0 and social networking online. How much do you think that this contributes to the success we've seen in things like support groups, online communities? Could you just comment on that?
Sure. I think there's two kinds of person. Two kinds of people online that are looking for mental health information. I think there are people that are concerned about their privacy and anonymity and who probably wouldn't join in a Web 2.0 kind of community like some of the ones I pointed out because of those concerns. Like, you wouldn't join a Patients Like Me community unless you were perfectly comfortable with not being anonymous. It's a real concern, though, because we're having a whole generation of teens and young adults grow up not quite understanding how long information lives on the internet, that there are caches, that there are copies of almost everything you put out there, and those copies can live on much longer than the original source. I can look up stuff that was posted on the internet in 1997 or 1995 in the Internet Archive and many other places. So I think that's one of those concerns that if you start talking about a mental health condition and you're not careful, that you do give identifying information or whatnot, it could come back to haunt you. It could come back to haunt you in an employment decision. It could come back in a healthcare decision, a health insurance decision, more of a issue where we don't have universal healthcare. So,
you If I may, I will just make a distinction between anonymity and pseudonyms. On the web, especially in Web 2.0, a lot of sites, what they want is an effective email. But you could hide your identity under a pseudonym. On blogs, you could do that. On Second Life, you could do that. And as a matter of fact, using a pseudonym where you hide your real identity, but you have an effective email, allows a lot of people to open up because they feel their real identity is protected, especially in Second Life. There's been a lot of questions about, it's a bit like, you know, suicide lines. When you phone, you know, you might know that they know the phone number you are phoning from, but you could phone from a phone booth and say, you know, I'm thinking of killing myself, could you help me, and so on. Also, you have to think that, in my experience, mental health issues are not only related to the patient or to the person that suffers from mental health, because somebody that has mental health has a family, has loved ones that are concerned for that person and that also want to know about mental health information. And Web 2.0 allows you to ask questions, to share information, which is quite different from just the static information that you used to find in a book. You could not question a book, but you could question online and get answers. The problem with that, and I'm sure some of you will talk about it, is this information valid? What is the validity of the health information I'm gathering online? And obviously in the States and in some other part of the world, and even in Canada, they start to have seals of efficiency or seals of acute health information. And obviously when this information becomes from a government office or from a professional order of you know, psychiatric nurse or something like that, it has more credibility. So the credibility of the health information is more of an issue than the anonymity that somebody might use to get that information.
Phenomena in the sense there is substantial institutional resistance among parties that stand to perhaps lose power in the course of this sort of internet democratization movement in mental health, providers, institutions. A couple of examples, when I was a young researcher trying to get a protocol to the IRB, prominent psychiatrist told me that people only change when they meet somebody like me and encounter me for a very long period. I think internet interventions are dangerous. And if I have my way, your protocol will never be approved. So just an example of that, and I'm kind of curious whether you have seen that from your perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't, unfortunately, change doesn't come about overnight, and change like what we've experienced on the internet in the past 15 years is in some areas very revolutionary. I wouldn't even say evolutionary, I'd say revolutionary, that it's very threatening to traditional providers or traditional people who can't think about ways to use some of these features and technologies and communications and whatnot to help their patients, to help their clients, to help researchers and whatnot. I think you're going to find that, you know, no matter what the change is, it happens to be the internet, and unfortunately, eventually those people retire. And younger people who understand the power of some of these things. I know it doesn't help you right now, but, yeah.
And if I may, this problem is all over the society. You have the same problem with the teachers. You know, when I did my scientific master, we were forced to have a laptop. So as the teacher talked, everybody went online to verify if there was a source that said something else that what the teacher was saying at the same time. The children are doing that right now. Government, we saw Barack Obama, who was the first Web 2.0 government official. But here in Canada, all the government, they still put up a static website because they are fearing of losing control. I work with various type of organizations, and the fear of losing control is everywhere. But the control has already been lost. So the matter is, How do you deal with it? How do you join the conversation which is already happening? And if nobody talks about you, well, you don't exist. So get a grip, you know?
Hi. Great presentations from both of you. Thank you. I want to ask you to reflect on maybe some sort of bigger questions in terms of what we're seeing in, you know, about human nature, human identity. For example, thinking about the way that we define extroverts and introverts. So, you know, an introvert doesn't make phone calls, an introvert doesn't go to the party, but an introvert does go online and create a Facebook page and put up photographs. So to what extent do we call them an introvert anymore? Do the terms, are they even relevant anymore? And so I guess I'm asking you to reflect on that. To what degree are we seeing a different kind of human animal? To what extent is this changing what we understand in terms of identity, who we are? You said the real identity. What's the real identity? Thank you, John.
Your question makes me laugh inside because this is the most often bad perception people have about the internet. Internet is for the introvert that has no guts of going outside. And like a lot of people said, well, Second Life, why do you go on Second Life if you don't have a First Life, you know? And why do you go on the web? Web isolates people. It's completely true. Web makes people connect in real life and meet face to face. I started, when you presented me, you said I started, you had a hard time pronouncing it. It's YulBiz. YuL is the letter of the airport of Montreal, and Biz is for business. It's a meeting of business people interested in blog and bloggers interested in business. Started that 2 years ago. It's now in 10 countries, in 5 countries, 10 places around the world. Every month, 100 people meet for real, take a drink, and chat and talk about blogs, and all those people met online. And all those people connected online. And, you know, yesterday I was at another conference about Web 2.0 and technologies. I met people that came from France and they came from Switzerland, and we already knew each other, and we already had a very big conversation because we already knew each other, but we had never seen each other before. But because of our online presence, we talked, we got to know each other, we got to know where everybody stands. So when we meet in real life, we already have mental images of the other person's stand or ideas or you know. So when we meet, hey, I'm so happy to see you, and I did not imagine you were so tall on the picture. And then we talk about, you know, the technology we share and about the idea we share. So the idea, you know, there are introvert person and there are extrovert person. But to categorize that on the web is like saying 20 years ago, my teenager is introvert because she speaks on the phone all night. You know, it's scary. She always speaks on the phone. She doesn't go out. No. Well, same thing with the parents that freak out about MSN today. Teenager, they need a way to express themselves. They need to invent communication. And 20 years ago, it was the phone. Now it's MSN. And when you have 10, 15 years old, you know, email, that's for old people. I send an email to my father, because, you know, my friends, we chat, you know. If I send an email, when you will receive the email, the information is already passed, you know, so what's the point? So the society will change, the perception of how internet affect people's life will change, and the misconception that people that are online are introvert and are afraid of the world will also change.
One last comment?
I agree.
This is really fun and exciting, but I think we're also eager to get some coffee so we can continue this conversation either downstairs where the coffee is or in the hall where the bookstore is. And those of you who have a book, please join us as soon as possible for an autograph session.
Qu'est-ce que ça veut, c'est pas un truc.